This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from Catatalk Software. A podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At Catatalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software.
Welcome to another episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I am not your host, Jeff Brickler. My name is John Thomas. I am our marketing manager here at Catatalk. If you have followed the podcast religiously, then you might have seen me on other podcasts, but chances are you might be meeting me for the first time. I can guarantee you, you're meeting Chris Kennedy for the first time on the podcast. He is our partner marketing manager. Chris, thank you for joining in for our podcast today. And I also want to welcome in our guest. I'm going to get her name right on the first try, which is Anya Czercherski. Anya, thank you so much for joining us. Anya is the manager and creator of the ERP and CRM software blogs. Anya, thank you so much for joining us today. Great to have you here on the Integrate Intelligently podcast.
Thank you very much. And I'm excited to talk about marketing instead of all things E-bomb, M-bomb, and all those that I usually hear from you.
We were talking before we turned the podcast mics on here that, this is a pretty technical podcast usually, which we love. It's great. We love in a technical, we work in a technical world, but it's nice to be able to talk more blogs, marketing, the things that we are. What happens when you put three marketing people on a podcast instead of former engineers and manufacturers? So, but we do live in those.
Walk into a podcast, start with a joke.
Exactly. So today, though, we are going to talk about the power of content marketing. We're going to talk about blogging, how that can transform your business in the ERP and the ISV space. So while we might not be talking about the technicalities of some of those things, we are going to be talking a lot about that space. And Anya, I would love to hear a little bit more for you to explain about the ERP and CRM software blogs. And it's something that's really unique in our industry. You don't see a lot of this type of thing. You don't think about this type of content a lot. So share a little bit more, your elevator pitch, if you will, of what ERP and CRM software blogs brings to the table.
Certainly. So the ERP software blog and the CRM software blog, and also we have one called the ERP Cloud blog that's outside the Microsoft Dynamics space, are group blog sites that about 160 Microsoft Dynamics partners, both reselling partners and add-on partners like Catatalk, participate in by putting their content up on our site, which is, you know, has a high domain authority, a lot of traffic. It's helping companies like yours to be seen by more people that are out there searching for those topics. Sometimes I use the analogy, it gets a little antiquated now as we go forward, but of a local newspaper and a national newspaper. So for example, your website is like a local newspaper. People expect to see content, blog articles, videos, and things from you there. My site is like a national newspaper where people would find you that maybe hadn't heard about you yet. They're seeing you with a lot of other people that are kind of larger in the space. So there's, I think, a good place for both to put your content both on your own site and out on a group site like ours. And really my whole philosophy when I built this program was to help companies use the power of the group. We're not all working on an island. We, by contributing content and links to one central site, it is that analogy, a high tide floats all ships. So we're helping all of us to be seen more, which helps the entire Microsoft Dynamics ecosystem, helps the people that are really searching to get all of the information in one place.
And Chris, I know you and Anya had the chance to meet at Dynamics Con. And Anya, you have built a lot of these relationships with folks in that Dynamics ecosystem. Take us back to 2009. You mentioned that, you know, you're kind of still figuring out what a blog was. I'm sure blogging has changed not at all since 2009. If you're listening, you probably hopefully could detect the sarcasm in my voice there. How did this blog come to be? Where's the idea for this? And, you know, what was your original vision?
Yeah, I think of myself as kind of an accidental entrepreneur. I never realized where this would go when it started. So back in 2009, I went to a Microsoft event and they said, hey, the new thing is blogging. You got to have a blog. And I had been in the Microsoft channel actually since 1999, working at reselling partners, doing marketing. So the partner that I was with, I was always looking for new ways to get us seen and to get us found online. So I went back home, told my search engine optimization consultant that was helping me with my website. I said, hey, Microsoft says we have to have a blog. I don't even really know what that is, but that's what they say is the new cool thing. And in our channel, especially, blogging was very, very new. I think I saw a stat that my blog came out the same year as the White House started a blog. So we have that in common. But what my SEO consultant, Dave Foreman, what he told me is, you know, a blog might be good for your ego, but it's not going to give you any leads because you're a small company. Who's going to write for it? Who's going to read it? Who's going to link to it? And then he said the sentence that kind of changed the course of my career, which was, you know, if we had a lot of companies that all wanted to contribute content to a blog, that could be a very powerful site. And I thought, well, I know a lot of people in this space. Maybe that's something that we could try. So I started it with really just the kind of small scale intention of helping the company I worked for as the director of marketing, to get more visibility online. And we started with 10 pretty visionary partners at the time, right? Because I just went out to them and said, hey, there's this thing. I know Jennifer Harris from TMC was one of my first members, and she remembers her business partner saying, there's this girl and she's got this thing. And and actually Microsoft gave us some seed money. I think it was $2,000 at the time. And we had some relationships, and their thinking was, hey, you guys can do things on this site that we're not allowed to do. So they helped us build some pricing tools and some things that we could put out on the ERP software blog. So it was an amazing business to start, right? There was zero investment, and we started being profitable right away. And from there, from those 10 partners, we then expanded and, grew, like I said, to about 160 partners that participate now. During COVID, I left my day job as director of marketing, and I really just focus on this.
A couple of things that come to mind as you're talking. One, maybe I'm wrong about this, and Chris, you can feel differently as well. We are, compared to people in the Microsoft Dynamics and all the Microsoft ecosystems, we're relatively new as CAD Talk and getting into those spaces. I feel like everyone I talk to tells me they've been at Microsoft since pre-2000, at least. Chris, do you feel that way also?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, everyone says like 1985 or 1996 or 99, and I'm like, 2025. So I feel like there's a lot to learn, but also a lot of people who really want to help people learn, like you, Anya.
Well, that's a great testimony to how great this channel is. I mean, sometimes I think, well, I haven't ever been in another channel. This is it for me. But a lot of people do tell me that this is one of the friendliest kind of channels in the ERP CRM space. I did venture out a little bit into Acumatica, went to some of those events and thought, oh my gosh, I don't really know anybody here. Let me go back to my comfort zone where I know all the Dynamics people. But I do think that's part of the reason why our sites are helpful too, is that it kind of brings new people like you into maybe this little country club environment, right? Where you get to be with everybody else.
I think that is a true testimony to the power of this community. I think that's something that we've experienced quickly, and we're, you know, across a number of different ERPs that we integrate with. So we're interacting across a lot of different communities, and it's really enjoyable to be able to get the different feels for these communities. But having invested in this Microsoft Dynamics space, I really see why this makes so much sense. I see totally why this works from this standpoint. I know that it's probably impossible to boil down 16 years of evolution of a blog because technology has changed so much in that time of what that looks like. But if you had to highlight maybe some high points of that evolution of the blog from 2009 to now where we're sitting, what would that look like for you?
So like I said, we started with about 10 members, and they were just at that time Microsoft Dynamics GP resellers. That was it, because that was my world, right? But as it started taking off and growing, we started adding the other Microsoft Dynamics product lines. And then we made the decision to add ISVs or add-on partners like CADTalk to that. And at each change that we made, we wondered, okay, is this going to be the end of this? Is this going to work? But we've just kept expanding and expanding and expanding to have different features, different add-on directories, different tools that people can use. Now, obviously, like everybody, we're starting to expand with AI. What can we do with AI on the site to help people? So the site has evolved a lot in many ways, but we're still pretty core to what our main goal was back in the day. I think one of the challenges that people always have and continue to have, even with AI, is how can I come up with good content to write about? What do people want to know about me? And so I think that's one of the ways, just as I've been doing this for so long, that I can really be helpful to people and help them to pull out what is it you should be writing about, and kind of give them the confidence that you have something to say. So I think that's been my evolution. And I love the fact that there are so many people now that I can see at events, that we can promote through social media. I guess that would be another one. Social media has been a huge shift from 2009 to now. We do a lot with LinkedIn and things like that. So yeah, that path, we're trying to always innovate and add new things, but the core value of, hey, let's all work together and contribute content and get found, is still the same.
What do you feel like in terms of that challenge of helping someone craft content that is captivating, true to their brand? What do you feel like tends to be the biggest hurdle for someone coming to you and saying, is this worth it? How do I do this?
Well, I would imagine that at your company, you have a lot of extremely intelligent engineers and software consultants that have so much knowledge trapped up here. But to get them to write a blog post, to get any billable consultant to write a blog post, is extremely difficult. You know, oh, I'm not a writer. I don't know what to say. I don't have anything to write about. But actually, those are the people that make the very best content. It's really not the marketing people like Chris and I, right? It's those subject matter experts. And so helping them to figure out, how do I take the information from here and get it down, has always been the challenge. And one of the things that I tell people all the time is, you know, brainstorm things that people ask you all the time. When you're in sales meetings, when you're in customer support calls, when you're talking even internally, what are those topics that come up? Brainstorm who can answer them in your organization, and then have someone maybe on the marketing team go up to them with your phone recorder, or nowadays it's so much easier with Teams and everything, and record them just stream of consciousness speaking. And then, again, AI has made this so easy for us now to take that transcription and polish it up into a nice blog post. But really keeping the person's personality, their word choices, the lingo, so to speak, of that industry, those posts with that good meaty content do so much better than a very polished kind of marketing-esque type of content. And sometimes that's just hard to get people to understand. And once they do, once they see the difference and they see how the audience, I think, reacts to those types of posts, a light bulb goes off. So I was listening to your company podcast from Scott and Jeff, and there were several things that they were saying that I thought, okay, now that is an excellent blog post. And they're just talking. They're just talking about their philosophy, what makes them different. And that's exactly the type of content that should be turned into blogs, videos, and put out on a site like mine.
So pulling back the curtain a little bit, Anya, it's so good to hear you say that because it's affirming to me as from a marketing strategy standpoint, because that is something, it was a huge part of this podcast because Scott has so much knowledge from doing this and he developed this from basically out of a need, out of a pain point, just as you talked about, find those pain points that someone might have. And you develop this entire product, this entire business out of a pain point. And so one of my reservations in using AI and figuring out this new landscape was AI generated content, or figuring out how to use content with AI and being reticent to be flag for something being AI generated or something along those lines. And something that changed my thinking on that, we were already doing this podcast, is actually at Community Summit last year. Sam Bush, now at Netstock, who I know you know, in the Microsoft space, she did a presentation on AI prompting for marketing. And I went and I realized that what we're creating with this podcast is not AI generated content. This is just good original content that AI can be helpful with in synthesizing, pulling out ideas, being able to create and assist in that creative process. So I think that, you know, it sounds like from what I'm hearing from you, that is something that every company can latch onto. It's why we've joined the ERP software blog, because we're able to distribute that content in a place. But I feel like what I would say, and I may correct me if I'm wrong, Anya, is that every company has got someone who's got something to say. It's just finding that and pulling it out.
100%. I think when people tell me we have nothing to write about, it almost makes me laugh, because I think you have so much to write about. You just need to figure out how to get it out. And doing things like your podcast where they're just talking, they're just, you know, expressing themselves, that all of that content with these, with the help of AI now, every single one of those podcasts could be turned into a summary, you know, embed the video, and boom, you've got probably, I don't know how many podcasts you've had, but dozens and dozens of you know, podcasts can be turned into blog articles. And I think helping people to see not only just creating new content, but where can I kind of reuse something that we've already done? Have you put a ton of work into a pitch deck for prospects, or some kind of FAQ or training documentation? A lot of that can be pulled out and used as content, educational content. You know, something else I used to do a lot is when I worked at a partner is I would take things like the Microsoft licensing guide and kind of pick it apart and find all the things that I didn't understand. And then find someone in my company to say, okay, what's the difference between this license and this license? I'm not quite sure. Well, if I'm not sure, then that means my prospect's also not sure. So taking that kind of content, distilling it down into something that a prospect can learn from also gives you new areas to look at. You know, so you've got the subject matter expertise. You've also kind of got these a little bit more technical posts, licensing. The list just goes on and on of where you can get content from. Yeah.
We are talking about AI, and we've also mentioned this idea that, or talked about the notion that the Microsoft space is one that is extremely friendly and welcoming and has a community that is extremely authentic. Would you be able to speak into sort of the hesitancy of the culture surrounding AI and sort of a lack of authenticity and how you see companies, maybe particularly in the Microsoft space, how it is a vibrant community that's sort of built on a desire to help one another and be genuine and authentic and transparent, and maybe speak to a company that maybe is trying to figure out what type of content they want to create, and maybe coach them through why authenticity, being genuine in a digital and AI age, why that transparency is really important, and not just important, but valuable and strategic.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot in that question, right? But I think the fact that AI is changing so fast, all of us, it feels like we're on a roller coaster. You know, I feel like it was just a few months ago that my team and I were saying, no, don't use AI at all. Don't use AI to write. It's evil. Okay, that's not true. So we had to, you know, get with the program a little bit and say, we're not going to be penalized for using AI because everybody's going to be using AI. It's like using a calculator. Is that called cheating now? No, it's using a tool. So, but how do we use AI to help us as opposed to doing the job for us? So, you know, I think the best way to use AI to come up with content is really to get the content already, like a transcription, and then ask AI to assist you in making it sound better, polish it up, or taking conversations that you have with a prospect and asking AI, what ideas can you come up with for a post, titles? But still the meaty, the core stuff has to come from your knowledge, and AI is the helper. Now, then again, I think that that's evolving too, because the more we kind of train our robots, right, we are going to be able to use them not just in that kind of proofreading way, but really in more of an advisor. There's a company I mentioned again, Technology Management Concepts out in California, and they're doing a lot with helping people in our channel to see AI differently. And one of the things that, you know, Roland Chi talked to me about it at DynamicsCon was, don't just see AI as an assistant, see it as a business advisor. So if you train it in such a way that you can say, here's everything I want you to know about me, about my business, my goals, my values, and give me advice in the spirit of Seth Godin, a marketing expert, or Warren Buffett, or tell me how I should make the strategic plan for content or whatever it may be. And that is so much more than just fix my grammar in this post. And we're getting there so fast. It's a little bit mind-boggling how fast we're getting there. And then, of course, AI to help you with things like keyword research, you know, coming up with social media posts to promote your content. All of that used to take so much time, and has become greatly simplified, obviously, with AI. So I do think the problem of I can't come up with enough content is a little bit mitigated by AI, but it's a bit dangerous, because I will, you know, transparently admit to you that I see people putting content on my blog that is bad. I mean, I can tell it's written by AI. It doesn't really make sense. It just repeats things over and over again. Maybe they said, I want it to be 1,000 words. And so it just repeats. Or another problem, I think, when using just AI for writing 100% is it can really talk to your audience as if they're idiots. And we want it to be simple, but we don't want to assume that the audience is dumb, right? So in your industry, you don't need to explain to somebody, why do we need CAD in manufacturing? They know that. They know the tools. They know what manufacturing is. They know, but what you want is to get into the deeper, you know, knowledge just specific to you. And I think that's a challenge, because AI will just kind of start super, super simple just to fill the page. And that's a challenge. So I think I went around, but hopefully I answered the question a little bit.
No, I think that, you know, I mean, gosh, we we turned these episodes around pretty quickly, but I feel like with the evolution of AI, by the time we post this episode, maybe what we're saying is outdated. I mean, yeah. it is moving that quickly. It really is. It's really unbelievable how quickly things are moving and how quickly those best practices mm-hmm. are evolving. Almost feels like there aren't best practices in some ways. It feels like those change constantly. It really is. It's really remarkable. One thing I wanted. Oh, go ahead, Anya. I think you had a response to that.
You know, I was just going to say one thing that Chris mentioned that I don't think I touched on was that trust aspect. And when all these changes started happening, with Google and the new algorithms, we kind of thought, oh, okay, the blogs aren't going to be as valuable anymore, the group blogs. But actually what we're finding is that they're more valuable because of that trust aspect. People, it's with AI, it's so easy nowadays to not know, am I talking to a person? Am I talking to a robot? Is this podcast real? I mean, we could be three robots right now and to doing a podcast. It could create that in a few minutes. It's scary. So I think when people have that authenticity, to your point, Chris, in their content, it signals to people, okay, these are people I can trust. And that is just, it's more and more important. And also Google's looking for content it can trust because it has the same problems we have of not knowing who's real. So there's a lot of things we're doing now on our sites to add like author schema in the background and author bio, kind of information so that Google also sees, okay, this is a real person with real expertise writing this article. So that's important to humans and search engines. And I think our site kind of fills that need because it's been around so long since 2009. It's got like 12,000 articles on just the ERP software blog. It's a signal for Google to say, okay, you've got the domain authority. You've got some foundation here. You know, another thing Chris and I were talking about earlier is that when we first started, we had one Microsoft Dynamics partner per state because geography was super important. Like I have my clients in Connecticut and you know, nobody else should come into Connecticut with me. So, or sell here. So, but we saw that change, right? As cloud everywhere. I work everywhere. I work with everyone and people didn't care so much about those kind of state designations on our site. But now we're coming back again where several resellers have told me, actually, it does matter again for someone to know that I'm local. Because if they needed to, they could drive to my office and see that I'm a real person. I have a real team. Maybe they never will, but they just know they could. And I'm not a robot or sitting in my, a funky garage somewhere. Like that kind of trust element, again, is kind of coming around to be more important.
I think that's a really important insight about that locality. And I appreciate your analogy earlier in the podcast about local versus national newspapers, because my very first job was in a local newspaper. So I appreciate that and the importance of that trust factor. That kind of leans into a little bit about this value of group blogging as the business value of it. We've talked about a lot of the trust factor and how important that's becoming. But I can almost hear the CEO in the background saying, what about the ROI? What about the direct benefits of that? What does that look like? How have you seen that benefit your members of your blog over the years?
Yeah, so 100%, the goal is to drive more traffic to that article on our site, have the person say, this person sounds like they know what they're talking about. Let me click through and go back to their website. And then from there, turn them into a lead. I always tell people, if I could sell ERP leads, I'd be a billionaire. That would be wonderful. but I don't. What I sell is the pathway, that traffic for people to find you and come back to your site. 100%, I have had members tell me, I can track directly a click from your site coming to my site, turning into a deal. Another, testimonials we've gotten is, I remember from Stock IQ, I think they said a prospect told me they saw us listed in the directory on the ERP software blog, knew what we did, called us, and became a deal. So, you know, I wish it's like marketing is an art and a science, my friend Tanya likes to say. It's definitely you can track the ROI, and you can track the clicks from our site back to yours, which you can then equate to maybe what you would pay for pay-per-click, for example. But I think there's also this non-quantifiable benefits of people saw us all over the place. It wasn't just one thing necessarily, but whenever they were researching, integrating manufacturing software to ERP, they saw us here and here and here and here. And they start to think, oh, okay, that's the company that I should reach out to, even if it's not on that same day. I had a company tell me recently, just out of the blue, said, hey, we closed a deal from your site. And I asked them how they found us. They said they'd read our blog article on your site. Awesome. Well, when I did a little bit more research, they hadn't posted any articles on my site since 2022. So wow. That means that prospect found a very old piece of content and it still had them take action. So that's one of the things I love about blogging too, is it's like that compound interest. Because you can do a trade show, spend a gajillion dollars or do a wonderful email campaign or lumpy mailing, but then it's gone, it's done. Whereas when you invest really in good content and spreading that around, it's working for you silently in the background so that people can find it when they're ready, not necessarily just when you're ready, when you're in front of them at the trade show. And I would say nowadays, you know, maybe even this is something you would say from DynamicsCon, I think nowadays there's another little element of promotion. So a company spends a lot to be at a trade show. And then if they're a member of my site, I'm doing all kinds of promotion for them on LinkedIn, on our blog site. So for, you know, the small cost of my site, which is $175 a month, you're getting, dare I say, influencer, you know, exposure from someone in the channel to say, hey, maybe you haven't heard about these guys yet, but you should. And is that worth the little add-on to your trade show investment? I would argue, yeah. So I think there's different ways to look at ROI. There's a really hard ROI you can measure. And then always in marketing, there's the part that's harder to measure, which is the bane of our existence as marketers.
it truly is. It's funny you mentioned the blog being found from 4 or 5 years ago as the way in which someone found a deal and all of that. I did a presentation internally within our company a few months ago on kind of the idea of the marketing funnel and explaining that, but also explaining the idea of you could apply this to B2B or B2C, I think, but a B2B buyer's journey and how someone might try to chart that as being linear. And it is so far from that. The number of people who are involved, the number of different touch points that are involved. It's that I feel like people try, and I don't know how you feel about this, Anya. I feel like I hear people try to explain marketing versus branding versus like trying to create these pockets of different categories for how you approach the different aspects of how you promote or advertise your business. I feel like to your comparison of the art and science, it's all lumped in together. I feel like it's very hard to try to parse those things out and almost detrimental to try to do that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know I was talking to Andrew King a few years back when he had just won Business Central Partner of the Year. And he said, our goal is just to become ubiquitous. Whenever anyone is thinking about BC, I want them to think about our videos, our posts, our shows, our presentation, everything. And it all is just kind of this giant cloud of of content pointing back to them. And so you know, I love having a business owner like that, that kind of sees that vision and says, I realize it's not just one thing. It's not just one campaign that's going to bring in all the leads. It's like this flywheel, this machine that you have to just keep slowly going, and get rolling. But yeah, that is hard for, especially for business owners to see when they just, it's like, okay, how much did I spend? How many leads did I get today? I think when I was, you know, the director of marketing at a small VAR, I was lucky enough to have a business owner that really just said, you know what, do what you want to do. And it took us a while to get that going. And I think I started with content marketing kind of earlier than a lot of people. And we were a very small reseller. And yet people thought we were so huge because we were putting out so much content and getting so seen, and we got all these awards, and it was really cool when people started to figure out, oh, you're just like this little partner. I didn't realize. And I think it's because we could be a little bit more nimble, and we just were focusing on inbound and getting as much content out there as we could, and having the prospects come to us, which I hasn't changed really.
You mentioned, and I kind of want to get into this part of the ecosystem, because I think this is a really interesting dynamic for people listening, because I think it's relevant. Microsoft ecosystem, or even outside of that, this kind of figuring out this relationship between a VAR, an ISV, and then the ERP provider, and kind of navigating that relationship. For someone who is in those different buckets, how have you seen content? How do you see content and marketing work well for a VAR, maybe for an ISV? Where does that overlap? Where is that different?
Excellent question. You know, and always at Microsoft, or, you know, at industry events, we always have these sessions of how can the buyers and ISVs get along? How can we help each other?
We sat in on one of those at DynamicsCon together. And so Directions together. And that partially sparked this question. So yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And it's typically the ISVs, the add-on providers, that are asking the question, right? Because they're like, we want to help you. We want to be friends with you. And the VARs are sometimes saying, yeah, we got enough friends. You know, we don't need any more friends. So I, you know, in terms of the context of blogging, again, I will go back out to the hill I'll die on, that I think that having content out there for people to find when they're ready versus when you're ready is helpful, because from a partner-to-partner perspective, if you've put a lot of content out there as an ISV, those partners are reading it too. They're looking at it saying, uh-huh, okay, maybe this is somebody that I should check out. Much further than just, you know, one time seeing a booth at a trade show. I also think that ISVs can have a little bit of a warm entry maybe into meeting some of the VARs when they comment on their content. Say, hey, you wrote a really excellent article about this manufacturing case study, you know, client that you worked with. I really loved the way you explained XYZ. Wow. That's it. No sales. Just, I really appreciated that content. I'm going to share it with my audience. Okay. So then when you do see that partner at a show, or, you know, maybe a cold call or so, it's easier for them to say, oh, I remember these guys. Yeah, they did that for us. I always think, you know, as my friend Kate Coffee Bacon says, give, not grab. So how much can you give to people that they're going to remember and then think, okay, maybe that's the ISV I want to work with. I think all of our directories too, on the site of the ERP software blog, of course, prospects are looking at that. We want them to look at that, but partners look at that too. So if you're an ISV trying to get more partners to know who you are, being listed there where they see other people listed is helpful. I think joint case studies are a great idea. Something where there, especially usually sadly has to be the ISV that has to offer to do most of the work, right? But to say, we had a great project together. Can we take on the burden, the expense of writing a case study together, and let's promote each other through this? Goes a lot further than just a phone call to say, hey, do you need our tool? Do you know anybody who needs our tool? And also making it as easy as possible for maybe a partner to know how to look for a prospect for you, which again comes down to content. Are you putting content out there that says, these are the questions that someone in this position has, these are the pain points? That can help to educate partners that you're trying to partner with too, to be able to identify what's a fit.
Oh, Anya, you're getting my gears turning as a marketer here of things. I'm like, we could do that better. So that's extremely helpful and extremely valuable, I think, for folks listening to this. In terms of that relationship with VARs, ISVs, all of that, as someone who has tons of these different partners working all through this same blog, do you ever run into challenges of balancing those relationships or not playing favorites or choosing to play favorites? How does that work? That's a position that we find ourselves in because we are working with a number of different VARs and a number of different ERP providers as well. So I'm curious how you navigate that.
You know, I would say that I try to be Switzerland, right? I try to be neutral, and everybody can put content on my site. And I, you know, we promote everyone. I think, so as the ERP software blog, it's easier to be neutral. As me, Anya Czacherski, do I sometimes fall into the trap of saying, oh, I think this, you know, go talk to them or go talk to them? Absolutely. And a lot of that comes back down to just relationships, right? Do I know the person at this AP automation firm? Do I know that they are great to work with? And yes, I do. So if somebody were to ask me, that's how I would do my recommendations, is who's easy to work with? Who do I have a relationship with, kind of maybe from events or different things? And there is an element of who do I think is putting out good content. But when it comes down to it, do I know like which AP automation tool is actually technically, like functionally better? No, I don't. It's not my world, right? So the only thing I can do is say, I know these people are good people, that you should maybe talk to them. But on the ERP software blog itself, there's very little... there's very little tiers, right? It's everybody's pretty equal.
That totally makes sense, and I appreciate the trying to play Switzerland. That can be a hard nation to embody, if you will, in that space. So I appreciate that. Looking, we touched on this earlier, so I kind of wanted to put a pin in it and return to it, of the evolution of AI going forward in content creation. Looking ahead, how do you see content marketing evolving in this space?
Yeah, I think we're going to get better and better for writing in a way that attracts the AI tools to mention us more, figure that out. Just as we've done for the past for search engines, you know, answer engines. So I heard someone, I think Brandy at Big Room Creative was talking about search engine optimization versus answer engine optimization. And I thought that was very interesting, because all of us as marketers are going to learn what is it that the AI tools want, so that when someone types in, what is the best, you know, manufacturing integration software for Microsoft Dynamics, you're going to hope that they mention you. And we're not there yet. You know, also at DynamicsCon, some of the things that came up is, will we even have websites in 5 years the way that we have them now? And that really helped me to start thinking about the fact that maybe it's just going to be more of a billboard that we go to and start talking with this AI agent, that answers all the questions for us about the product and tell me about pricing, tell me why I should use it, tell me, which, you know, is a huge endeavor to try to train that agent to do that. But it could be where we're going as well. But then on the other hand, I also think that, I don't know, I also kind of in my gut feel like people are going to a little bit rebel against all of this and say, I want to talk to a person. And so that will still, I think a lot of people think that's going away, but I also, maybe just the generation I'm in, think, okay, we human communication, human interaction is still going to be super important and maybe more important because we're going to not trust anything. And the only thing I can trust is when I look you in the eye and see that you know what you're talking about. So I don't know. I'm not an AI expert for sure. Sometimes when I'm at these, you know, Microsoft events, I feel so like a newbie with AI. And then I go to like my local book club or something and they don't even know what ChatGPT is. And I'm like, oh, let me tell you, I'm so smart. I know all about AI, you know? So there's a comparative there.
At least from my perspective, I don't think it is a generational thing. I likewise feel similar that the personal contact at a company is going to become more and more valuable. Like I think of the shift from like social media marketing coming from a company's profile to being sort of like disseminated by influencers or even like individuals who work for that company. Like I think there are people in the Microsoft space who do this really well, who have built personal brands that sort of in conjunction make their company's offerings seem more appealing because people see that individual who works there as more trustworthy. I feel like the more and more, I feel like over a long time, the shift has gone away from like the company posting on its LinkedIn page or its Instagram page or its TikTok and empowering employees or hiring influencers, things like that, to sort of be champions of the brand, champions of the product. And that I think buyers want to hear from good and negative experiences. So they want to hear from champions of a brand. Why do you love this brand? And I think that is something that, maybe I'm wrong, I think that is something that AI won't be able to replicate. I think that people champion things, and I think AI is too good at aggregating knowledge to be able to champion one thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I know that putting on a podcast like you guys do is a ton of work, but the benefit is even if somebody who's evaluating your company and your product doesn't listen to every single one, the fact that they can go out there and see, okay, these guys have consistently put out content to help us to show their expertise, I really do think that goes a long way towards solidifying that feeling in their heart of, okay, they are going to look out for me. They know what they're talking about. That's somebody that I want to work with, right? So it is a lot of work. Content marketing is a lot of work. It would be so much easier if we could just send out a gajillion emails and, you know, or go to a trade show and get all the leads. But I've seen evidence, and I really do believe that it's worth the time and effort to put into it because of the long-term effects.
As we start to wrap up our discussion here, this has been fantastic, and I've really enjoyed this a lot, and being able to hear from you, Anya, and your expertise in the space and all of that. What is one takeaway that you would want someone to have from this discussion on blogging, on working in the ISV and VAR space and content marketing, all of those things we've talked about? If you had to give someone their nugget to take home, what would that be?
One nugget, I would say, think about how you can turn conversations into content. Think about how you can not just write about maybe some more obscure or either obscure or even too technical types of ideas, but really to think about what are my prospects, what are my customers actually asking? What are they searching for? And you can get that by the conversations you have with them and turning, just getting in the mindset of every time you're talking to somebody, thinking, how could I turn that into content? How could I make that into a blog post, right? My old boss used to just laugh at me all the time because he'd be talking and I'd say, that's a blog post. Quick, put, you know, I'd shove my phone up into his face. Because they don't even realize that it's coming out of them, but it's gold. And so I think having marketers like us think more about that, as opposed to let me just do some keyword research and see which keywords are the highest and write 5 blog posts about those or outsource that to somebody to write about that doesn't really know what's going on. Really thinking about how you can take everyday conversations that you have with customers, prospects, and your team and turning that into content that people really want to read and that sounds like you and is authentic.
You've given me my LinkedIn clip. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think sort of from my perspective, my personal takeaway is there's the adage, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think that we see that in like a lot of different, like at different macro and micro levels. We see that in sort of, I think we've experienced that, at least I experienced that in DynamicsCon, the aggregate effect of a lot of people like at the partner marketing event where you and I met, trying to go further together. I think we also see that in a bit of a more micro level with something like the ERP software blog of a lot of people coming together to sort of aggregate knowledge to provide a service to customers. But I think also to your point, if a marketing team wants to go far and really create that sort of flywheel effect that you're talking about, it has to be a team effort from the entire organization of aggregating that organization's knowledge and the people within that organization to really do an effective job of providing knowledge and benefit to the customer to sort of gain that trust in order to move the customer along in the buying journey.
Yeah. And I think you and I met, Chris, because of LinkedIn. So we shouldn't discount the building of relationships that way. Because I think 100%. I saw posts about you packing your camera equipment and getting ready. And that is what made me recognize you at the table at the partner marketing event, start this conversation, and then, you know, look where it's gone.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that earlier when you were talking about like commenting on people's posts. Like I think it's very easy to underestimate from, I think for us as marketers, it makes sense. But I think that's something that marketing teams should communicate to their organizations is like, you should be present on your customers or your partners' pages in providing value, providing kudos, providing all the, like you should be cheering on people so that when you sort of come to make sort of like a relationship or partnership withdrawal, sort of like an ask of like, hey, can you help me out with this? Someone's far more likely to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, LinkedIn is we could have a whole nother podcast on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, video, there's so much to cover, but not enough time.
Well, it's been great, Anya, to have you on. Thank you so much for taking some time to join us here. I would be remiss to not allow you the opportunity to share where folks can find your various blogs, and then also if they're interested in becoming a member, how that process goes.
So erpsoftwareblog.com, crmsoftwareblog.com, and erpcloudblog.com are the places that you would go to read the educational content about people like you, Chris and John, that are publishing content to help people in the buying process for either the ERP and CRM tools or the add-on kind of functionality that goes on top of those. And if somebody wants to be a member of those sites, put their content out there, be listed in all of my directories, we have a site called groupbloggers.com that people can go to find information about that. Or I would say just, you know, find me on LinkedIn, if you can spell my last name, and contact me that way, or just that would be how you'd get the most information.
Fantastic. Anya, thank you again so much for joining us here on this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast, and for all your contributions to this community and all of your work. I know that your work is highly valued, so we appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on such a techie podcast.
We'll resume to your regularly scheduled programming of talk about bills of material and manufacturing next time. But thank you all for listening to this marketing edition of the Integrate Intelligently podcast. We'll get Jeff and Scott back on here for next time. But thank you, Anya. Thank you, Chris, for joining us here. Stay tuned. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CanTalk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on CanTalk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by CanTalk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@cantalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.